Blog Talk Radio.
Episode 122. You are now listening to The Philosophy Show, and today is January the 21st, Thursday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name's Thomas, your host, and today's episode I have titled, Tell Me, What Is It Worth? What is it worth? What is it worth? What is a speech worth? If you're invited to give a speech, what would it be worth to you compared to maybe Tony Robbins or Hillary Clinton? You know, someone that can demand big bucks for a speech. Or whoever, Michael Jordan or Alex Jones. Tell me, what is it worth? What is that speech worth? And what is it worth your individuality to be treated as an individual rather than a group? To be treated as an individual in the justice system, in day-to-day life, commerce, socializing, whatever, and publicly and privately, basically. So what is it worth? And that is the show tonight. Now, feel free to call in and we can discuss whatever else. You know, what is the truth worth? You know, and what are the consequences? Are we sure we're seeing the forest between and are amongst the trees? Are we seeing, we're seeing the full picture of even what kind of labyrinth we are in? You know, does it matter who strikes first? You know, in the future, is there going to be pre-crime and eugenics? And are there going to be any persecuted that are going to rise up and become the new whatever group that forces its will on others or something like that because they have something to prove. What are the consequences if you go down certain paths, right? Like, you know, the lifeboat scenario. Or the question, you know, if you had to kill 1,000 people, but you knew it would save millions, you know, or if you had to kill the Hitler baby and it would save the Holocaust, or, you know, lots of different scenarios like that, Saddam Hussein, or just experiments on different things, or if you're in the lifeboats and, you know, there wasn't enough of space in a lifeboat, everyone would drown. But if you could tell like 3 people to leave off of it out of the 12 or whatever, then all would be saved. So not, you know, of course they could volunteer themselves. So, but what is the bigger picture? Because is it all a bunch of likelihoods? If it is, then, you know, in certain situations, is every situation its own individual situation, even though it might accompany some principles? Because this would be a unique situation that doesn't come up a lot. But what if the newspaper headlines were a boat drowned because everyone refused to let everyone off? And, you know, 100 years later, they found it in some kind of scuba expedition, everyone just holding hands in that lifeboats and not refusing to let anyone else. Who knows what would have happened? Maybe a bunch of dolphins would have swam along and put them to shore, right? So maybe that story would be told. Maybe it wouldn't be told. But consider this. Can you imagine that happening, unless if it was some kind of cult or something where they're probably drowning on purpose? No, hardly. Can you? I mean, that everyone would go down with the boat, not just the captain. Willingly, when the majority could be saved. Now, I'm not saying that's a positive thing. I'm just saying, like, maybe we're not seeing the forest through the trees, because people, most common sense would be, you know, of course, you know, if you're going to save like 12 people on this lifeboat and if only three had to go, I mean, where's the decision, right? But now we're assuming that's the type of society that we're in, and that's how we think, and that's our assumption, you know, where's the question, right? What if, let's just think for a second, I know it's not, hopefully it's not going to give you a headache or anything, but just to imagine a thought experiment, and what if people didn't refuse to? I mean, if someone volunteered, they let them volunteer, but they didn't force anyone, and you know, I mean, all sorts of things. I mean, this lifeboat example is not the best, but, you know, maybe someone could swim on the side of it or take turns swimming on the side or something. I don't know. But you know, no one forced anyone to do anything like that, even if they were up against these big odds, basically. It was, you know, I guess ultimate libertarian or something like that, right? Then you would have to assume, like, maybe that is just a fingerprint or a shadow or a consequence of the society at large. Because if there were cases like that, then you would have to imagine, okay, well, why did they do that? Maybe they were brought up that way. Maybe their society, you know, in this imaginary world had evolved that way somehow, or, you know, they steered themselves that way, per se. And so if you had a whole society like that, so maybe when you're saying, like, okay, so, you know, by not seeing the picture of, you know, let's say exterminating or, like, banishing three people from the boats, you would say, well, you're obviously not seeing the forest through the trees, right? So I would think not the big picture. The big picture is, yes, if you're going to save a couple, it's better to have a couple people live than some, than everyone die, right? There are lots of different situations. Some are natural disasters where you don't have a choice. Some, you know, you could say you don't negotiate with terrorists, and that might be a principle in itself. And this is kind of a way, a principle. It has different characters, but does it have the same actions or consequences, I guess. But I don't know, because it might affect the future differently and in these different scenarios. But imagine if you did live in a society where that was the norm, and the exception would be like where someone would force the three people off the boat, where it would be the norm. The majority, where people would, you know, not want anyone to leave the boats or whatever, I guess. I mean, that's a bad example. Again, it does sound kind of foolish. If no one, obviously, people would be stupid if some people didn't volunteer, but no one was forced to, in a sense. And maybe there's better examples besides that lifeboat one, because I can think of a lot of different arguments that could go any way there. But, so then you would be living in a world, though, where there's a lot more cooperation, there's a lot less war. So, yeah, maybe that's a bigger picture of letting some be sacrificed for even a much greater whole, because maybe if we all had that good attitude, even though some people might die on a lifeboat, you would be having a huge society where there'd be a lot less suffering and a lot less wars, for sure. Imagine no wars, no wars. Imagine a day without war. Imagine that's happened a few times in history, I think, right? A week without war, has that happened in history? A month without war? I don't know. We're kind of pushing it there. I mean, if you look through history, you can look on Wikipedia, the history of wars, and I'll show you all the wars pre-BC and post-AD and all that stuff. So there's thousands of them, just thousands of wars just going on. It's just like something that's always going on is a war. Yeah, just imagine, you know, because most people, you know, just want to be left alone, and they just want to be left alone. And, you know, so anyways, so if you lived in a big society like that, where people were really respectful of each other, there was no war, there was no crime, hardly, and there's cooperation, peace, and prosperity, but maybe you would do something stupid like be so cooperative where, you know, maybe you wouldn't have certain survival instincts or something, where you would die in a lifeboat or something, or maybe just so emotional and passionate you wouldn't let anyone, you wouldn't want to, you know, you'd say like, we're all going to make it to the end or something, we'll figure something out. You know, we don't have to all drown in the boat, but we can not have to force anyone off. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe which is the bigger force? Maybe there's always a bigger force outside of the force that you just started peeking over. And there's even a bigger one in the same principle as what you're talking about, but just in a different way. So, you know, one thing I was thinking about from last week is, you know, different groups that are persecuted a lot of times, not always, but they come back through history. The once was abused becomes the abuser, you know, and so... Or the once conquered becomes a conqueror is another way to say it, you know. And all throughout history, I mean, if you look at the Old Testament and the Bible, you know, being persecuted in Egypt and then, you know, having kingdoms and conquering, you know, and wars of defense, but also wars of offense sometimes. And so in order to keep that going, you know, you have to create for some types of wars. I mean, I'm not saying every era, you know, was bad. I mean, I think Solomon had peace, right? If you're looking in the Old Testament, and there's others, and some people really only fought in self-defense. But then I think there are others that, you know, committed a lot of wars. But the point I'm trying to make is when people go to war, a lot of times they have to dehumanize others to do that, or the people in charge believe they have to rally the troops to dehumanize the others to make their society more effective in the wartime scenario. And you know what? I mean, it makes sense. I mean, but I'm not saying it's always the right thing to do, of course. Like, what if in the bigger picture we think of everyone as human? But just showing you there's different groups, and that's probably the answer to a lot of, like, of what's wrong in this world. I mean, you know, you had the Christians were persecuted early on, but then once they became in power, at first, and at least some sects of, you know, there was accusation thereof of calling people heretics and the burnings and also the Inquisitions. And then after that, you had, you know, like in World War One, the Germans were persecuted pretty much after the war. They were in debt, and, you know, then they became the Nazis and saying they're all better than everyone else. And, you know, they had to strike back, and because they felt they were abused. And the same thing with in the Arab world, the Muslims, Islam, maybe that religion was created in a sense like that to give a group an identity, whether that comes first or the war comes first, or maybe someone wanted to conquer and then they decided to have that. But it's the same thing. And now, after being conquered, whether we, you know, disposed of the leaders in Iran and have meddled in Libya and Iraq for sure, and Syria and Yemen and Pakistan and, you know, some other places here and there, you know, maybe they're feeling like, you know, I don't know, subhuman in a sense. So they're rallying around like a religion and viewing what they see into it, what they want to see into it. I mean, everyone can look at something differently. And that is true. And people do. And, you know, even in the United States, after the Civil War, the South, you know, had a lot of violence and because of the way they felt like they were treated from the North. Or now when these groups commit these violent things, I'm not saying that's good at all. That's horrible and wicked. They become exactly what they hated or supposed that others would think of them as that. Now, there's one time in history where we kind of learned that lesson was with like the Marshall Plan after World War II, and we rebuilt Japan and Germany and West Europe and we destroyed parts of like South America and stuff in the Middle East and, you know, other places, Vietnam. But we do have a record of rebuilding an area and or investing in it and encouraging that. And then, you know, just treating the situation differently and treating them as allies and potential partners instead of, you know, the enemy still, then, you know, they grew up to be more prosperous countries and stuff. And we stopped this cycle of war pretty much. I mean, so it is possible that it can be done. I mean, now, like, as far as dehumanizing people, I mean, you know, one thing that's clear is it seems like what the universe does is what is fair. What you do unto others as you want done unto yourself is not just a suggestion. It almost seems like a law. Like, you know, if you can dehumanize others, and others can dehumanize you. And at least, I guess, in some sense, they could be justified for it. And so we can accept the world we live in, and then we can also fight for what we believe in. So, you know, everyone has the right to do that, of course. And some might believe might makes right. And, you know, or, I don't know, maybe there's a bigger picture outside that forest, you know, about what's worth living in and working and cooperating with, you know, as many people as you can, I guess. And, you know, there is a difference between what's in the public and what's in your private life. I mean, people in the future could claim, you know, because we are built on a system that is built on ethics and principles that you are an individual and you have individual rights. And so that we might see that in other areas of life as well, since we apply those principles so dearly, to our public system, our public sector, our public system, the governments, and you know, so we want everyone to be treated equally in the government. We know not everyone's going to have equal results or apply themselves the same way, but definitely in the justice system, we do want that. And, you know, we want to encourage and invest, I think, where we can. And we should, you know, I mean, you have to ask yourself, do we want to live in a world where everyone is treated as an equal human being and where we communicate and engage? We know we're not doing the best that we can right now. Or do you want to live in a world where people are just completely judged on, you know, they could have like a little card on their little pockets that has have their IQ or something. And in the future with DNA, I mean, it's going to be, you know, almost certain that you can have whatever child's IQ that you want with other specificities like eyesight, hearing, and other superhuman senses and, you know, bigger brain, everything. I mean, just the whole works, you know, like a Ferrari or whatever. And, you know, so, and then if that's possible, is it, and if that's feasible, is that not the right of every single person to be born into the most humane way possible and with the most advantages that you can? Because you're an innocent person, right, before you're born, or does it matter? And the free market will work itself out, I guess. I mean, in some ways, it's got to, and it will, no matter what, right? It'll find, life will find a way. But at the same time, you know, we have some things that we uphold certain standards to. And yeah, it's, I think the society where, you know, everyone has equal rights and are at, under the law tree the same, not expected to have the same results, but I think as much as possible, like within the beginning, given a equal shot, a chance, and then treated fairly throughout the system and confidently that, you know, that you have a free life. And and I think that's better for the whole. And, you know, it might not be perfect, but for some people, I think it's on a good path, at least, and a good momentum. And so, and everyone can pursue whatever the heck they want, right? Why not? Why not all? But, you know, there is a group that I guess it's kind of become a group that call themselves anti-natalists, and I have no problem with it at all. Actually, I think it's very thoughtful. But it's just people saying that they think that one of the persons that makes some videos in Medham is pretty entertaining, I have found, but most of the time. But you can find him on YouTube, someone who is a philosopher and trying to pursue science and stuff like that. But I do find his videos interesting. I think I might put that on one of my favorites. But anyways, I don't agree with everything he says, but he makes some good points and is, you know, trying to, and has some good formats too. He doesn't have the right to bring anyone else into this world that he calls a poop hole, because I mean, it's not the, you know, as things should be, it's you're not in the Wizard of Oz or whatever, although some people would argue that it is pretty darn good, right? And so kind of like the same thing as you don't have a right to kill another being, and so that's why some people might become a vegan, or some people, you know, I guess are Amish and don't want to partake in the system. Some people, you know, decline from going to war. Some people decline from being whatever bad thing there is. Some people quit their job because they feel like what they're doing is out of control or whatever, or they try to take a stand in that job. And so, yeah, those have been my thoughts as of late. And so let's see if there's anything else to that. I mean, that's so, and I did say at the beginning, so what is it worth? What is it worth? Tell me, what is it worth? And I said, how much is this, well, I'll say it backwards, the truth. How much is that worth to you versus lies and lies from anyone? And how much is it worth to be treated as an individual to you? You know, I would call you by your name, but, you know, I'm talking to anyone who's an individual. How much is that worth to you to be treated like an individual? And how much is it worth if you give a speech? Because Hillary Clinton has given some speeches in the last couple years, and she makes like about $250,000 a speech on average, whether she gives a speech to Goldman Sachs, big banking company, who almost destroyed the economy in 2008. Remember that, the Great Recession or whatever. And lots of other companies. There's like tens of them, all different big corporations that, no, I would never do what they say, you know, when I've made millions of dollars in the last couple of years, tens of millions. And, you know, for these speeches, I mean, you know, some speeches have been up to like $600,000 worth of speech. $250,000 a speech, and you're making, you know, like a speech a month or something like that. I mean, you know, with these big companies that, no, they don't, they're just, what, they're giving you a lot of money. I mean, for 1 or 2 hour, or even let's just say a 1 day speech. I mean, for a speech. I mean, some people that really care about stuff give speeches for free, and some. And I know you're popular and your time's limited, but still, I mean, is that not bribery, or is it? Especially when a lot of those groups that pay you have people in there, you know, that used to work for the companies, and now they're like people that are in the administration or in different executive departments. So look up Hillary's speeches. I mean, there's, yes, if you look up, I have about 1 minute remaining here, but there's an article that's on, let's see here. There's an article that's on Zero Hedge. Let me find the name of it. We have about a minute remaining. Check out this article, The Complete Breakdown of Every Hillary and Bill Clinton Speech and Fee Since 2013. And it's Morgan Stanley, $225,000 on April 18th, 2013. Dutch Bank, there's a lot of them listed there, a lot, very much a lot. Which ones are Hillary's, which ones are Bill's? But this has been the Philosophy Show. Take care. I hope you have a good day and more. So we'll talk to you. We'll hear from you, and we'll do another show next week. Again, for episode 123. So take care.
There were some clouds, they were rolling through the sky, and they brought down all